Texas proposed rule on hospital visitation. We are going to, let me just give you a brief introduction as to what I'm going to cover. And at that point, we're going to then mute the phones so that we don't have anyone's background noise interfering. So today we're going to talk about the hospital visitation rule that's been proposed. I'm going to briefly cover the origin of the proposed rule, then the proposed rule itself, and then some analysis and issues that are raised by the rule, including some thoughts on items that you may wish to comment on to HHS during the current comment period. So that's how we're going to proceed. Does anyone have any questions before I get started and mute the phones? All right, and we will do questions and answers at the end. Great. Okay, so the origins of this process start on April 15th when President Obama issued a memorandum to HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius with the idea of ensuring that all patients have the right to choose the visitors that they have in the hospital. It was interesting that he chose April 15th, as April 16th is National Healthcare Decisions Day. I'm assuming that there's some correlation there, although I haven't had that confirmed. So the thinking of the Obama administration is as follows, that hospitals now often limit visitation, particularly in the ICUs and sometimes in other situations, to next of kin. And they have identified that this is a particular issue to the members of the gay and lesbian community, among other groups, non-married individuals, et cetera. And there, in fact, have been some stories that sort of cited as the backstories of patients who were dying in the hospital ER who were gay and lesbian, and the ER would not let those persons' partners be with them at their death. So this is in large part the impetus for the reg, for the proposed regulation. The vehicle, the legal vehicle that they're using to do this is under the Medicare and Medicaid regulations, under the conditions of participation for hospitals in Medicare and Medicaid. So essentially, virtually all hospitals will be covered by this because almost all hospitals are involved in accepting Medicare and Medicaid patients. And this is, in fact, the same vehicle that was used in the Federal Patient Self-Determination Act of 1990, which required hospitals to ask patients upon admission if they have an advance directive. That was also done through the Medicare-Medicaid conditions of participation. President Obama's memorandum ordered Secretary Sebelius to issue regulations to bring this to fruition. The second piece of his memorandum was to ask the department to identify and eliminate any existing barriers to hospitals respecting their patients' advance directives. And this is a piece of the memorandum and the proposed regs that hasn't gotten much attention. So on June 28th, the department published in the Federal Register the proposed rule to implement the Obama memorandum. And I'm first going to tell you specifically what the language is in the proposed rule, and then I'll go back and talk about some of the background pieces that are in the Federal Register as part of the proposed rule, which really flesh out their intent. And it's also worth noting that Secretary Sebelius has asked hospitals to voluntarily comply with the proposed rules even in advance of their permanent adoption or adoption in whatever form they finally take. So the gist of the actual regulatory language that the department is proposing is as follows. First, that patients have the right to have the visitors of their choosing and to withdraw or deny any such visitation right as they wish. And similarly, that the patient's representative, if the patient is not speaking for him or herself, that the representative has this right as well, if acting on behalf of the patient generally. Secondly, that hospitals must inform patients of this right, including also any limitations that the hospital has placed on visitation rights and privileges. Third, that the hospital can't restrict visitation privileges on the basis of either race, color, national origin, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. And fourth, that all visitors designated by the patient or the rep have visitation privileges that are no more restrictive than those which would be offered to immediate family members. And lastly, they order hospitals to have written policies to implement these rules. So that's the proposed reg. There is about a page or so of background that the secretary supplied, and I'm going to talk about the background and its potential issues that the rule raises. First, about those that affect all clients of yours and essentially all patients, and second, talking a little bit about the pieces that affect specifically unmarried persons, whether gay or straight. So on the pieces affecting all clients, here's what the background says. The department specifically talks about the patient or the patient's representative being able to designate verbally who the patient would like to have as visitors, and to do this, and they can do this at the time or any time during the patient's hospitalization. The rule and the comments are completely silent on the issue of any sort of written designation in advance of hospitalization that the patient might complete. It's completely silent, and it does not address it at all. So I think one of the issues the questions that this raises is, will patients or will estate planning attorneys such as yourselves decide to draft a hospital visitation authorization as part of your client's healthcare directives package just to have those bases covered in advance? And is that something that you would want to do and that you think would have value? It's an interesting question on its own. It's also interesting because if you look at HIPAA as a model, because HIPAA did not explicitly require the creation of a standalone HIPAA release, and in fact, you know, HIPAA specifically says that someone who's the healthcare power of attorney is automatically a designated agent under HIPAA. Nonetheless, many attorneys have adopted the approach of having a HIPAA release just to provide extra protection for the client. So the next question for you is, do you think that the proposed rule should specifically recognize such a hospital visitation document? And if so, you may want to submit a comment to HHS about exactly that. If you were to decide to draft a hospital visitation authorization, do you think that the healthcare power of attorney should trump this document, or should it stand side by side as a separate document? I can certainly see instances where it might be beneficial for the healthcare power of attorney to have the authority to essentially override any list, someone on a list of patients that the on a list of visitors that the patient had already drafted. For example, you could have a situation where you have a difficult or visitor acting, you know, crazy or acting out, causing a disturbance. Could be someone who actually has mental health issues. Could be an ex-spouse where they were on reasonable terms. You can foresee all kinds of situations where there could be issues during a hospital visit. So the question is, would you, if you do go the route of drafting such a document, would you want to add language that specifies what trumps what? Or perhaps you might want to think even about including the list of visitors within the healthcare power of attorney, as that's when the written document would more likely come into play, when the person, when the patient's not able to speak for themselves. However, that's not always the case. For instance, you could have a situation where you have a patient who is, you know, who's conscious and capable of making decisions, but is sleeping. And you have a family member who, or a friend, not a family member, but a friend who wants to come in and sit with that patient. You don't want to wake the person up to ask them if the visitor is allowed. So you may want the document not part of the healthcare power of attorney. Those are the pieces that affect all of your clients and patients. There are some questions or issues that arise specifically relating to unmarried persons, whether heterosexual or homosexual. And as I've think about these and have talked to other folks, these are as followed. The HHS in the background specifically says, let me back up for a moment, I apologize. And the issue is specifically around the patient's representative if the patient is not able to speak for him or herself. The background in the Federal Register specifically says that it wants hospitals to require written documentation of a person being a patient's representative only in rare cases. And it actually asks for comments on what those rare cases should be. And it also specifically states that the hospital may not require written documentation of the patient being the representative when where when this representation flows from a quote-unquote legal relationship recognized under state law, example, marriage, civil union, domestic partnership, or parent-child relationship. So in other words, they're saying that in states that have legal recognition for same-sex couples or for common law marriage in that as well, that the hospital cannot require documentation. And what I believe they're trying to bar against is hospitals asking gay couples for proof of marriage or civil union in those states where it's permitted, but not asking heterosexual couples for proof of their own marriages. The other issue here is that the regs do not address states where there is not any legal recognition of civil union or same-sex marriage in any case. As I understand it, and as I talk to others, it seems that these couples would still need to have something in writing, whether a healthcare power of attorney, a hospital visitation authorization, or both, in order to be able to have the representative designate visitors and, in fact, act as a representative at all. And this is a piece that I think that I understand that members of the gay and lesbian community are going to be addressing in their comments. The piece that I also want you would like to draw your attention to is the one about respecting identifying any barriers to hospitals representing patients' advance directives and trying to eliminate those. As I said, this hasn't gotten much attention. And the proposed rule does not identify any barriers. Obama administration asked it to identify barriers. They didn't do that. They simply asked for comments. We have a suggestion on a comment, and I will explain the barrier to you and the suggestion. We occasionally learn about a situation where a hospital staff person has refused to get the patient's documents from us or from another registry. Again, I would like to reiterate that this happens very infrequently. It is rare, but nonetheless, it does happen every so often. There are 5,000 hospitals in this country, with each of them have tens of departments that may be asking for documents, three shifts a day, multiple staff on each shift that might be presented with a registry card of some sort, and it's not surprising that occasionally there's a staff person who just doesn't know what to do with this and can't manage to, just refuses it. In our experience, this is always about ignorance, not about malice in any way, nor even about hospital policy. So our suggestions to the proposed regulations, and this is something that we will be submitting our own comments to HHS on this, is as follows: that as part of the hospital policies and staff training, that they be required to train the appropriate staff about the existence and the nature of advanced directive registries, and that they require their staff to make a reasonable attempt to obtain the directives if they're presented with evidence of a patient's registration in a registry. We believe that this is requirement would not be onerous and would be very reasonable. It would be done as part of the training on patients' rights and requesting of advance directives generally. And I would invite you and request that you submit a comment to HHS about this. Even if you've not ever had a patient who's had that experience, and most of you probably have not, it can only be protective. And that we, in fact, have a draft letter that, if you haven't seen it already, we did email you about it previously, but we can send it to you again that you can use as a template to submit your own comment to HHS. And I know some attorneys have done that, a few attorneys have done that already. Comments on any subject related to this proposed rule are due by August 27th. You can submit a comment about this matter of recognizing registries. You can submit a comment about written documentation of hospital visitation authorizations or anything else that you wish. Comments are due August 27th, and you can submit them either online or send a written letter to HHS. They need to receive it by August 27th. We will resend to everyone on this call the instructions and the links for how to submit a document and the instructions for how to send it in writing, and also we'll attach the draft letter so that if you'd like to submit that comment to HHS, you can do that. That concludes my prepared remarks. I'd like to open up the floor to questions. Does anyone have any questions?
Randy, okay. This is David Crandall.
Yes. Hi, David. How are you?
Pretty good. I just had a couple questions, I guess. You mentioned the issue about not requiring documentation for the relationship.
Right.
And I'm kind of lost about why that's important. And if there's a power of attorney or something out there that gives somebody the authority, they need to see the power of attorney to know who has the authority to make the decision.
Well, my understanding of what they're trying to do is not require a healthcare power to be produced. Just as, like, say you have a header with any couple, if a couple comes in and say somebody's unconscious, and the other person says, you know, I'm the wife or I'm the husband. And it's the hospital policy, and often, you know, the state, you know, policy is it's assumed that that person can be a decision maker. They don't ask them to produce a healthcare power of attorney. It's my understanding that this is what they're attempting to do with this. Am I helping?
Well, yeah, I understand that explanation. I guess I don't understand why that would seems to me that's the reverse of what should happen. Rather than saying, well, nobody needs documentation, you should make everyone produce documentation.
Got it. Well, that would be another way to go. And you can make that comment. Right. Right. I would now, and I'm sure, frankly, that, you know, hospitals would prefer that. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think the question is more from a practical matter, whether that's reasonable. I mean, you know, the latest survey shows actually that about 50% of, well, only about a third of adults actually have written documentation of a healthcare power or a living will. So, I think that's the challenge at the moment. But make, you know, submit the comment. Anyone else?
As far as your question to us about whether the power to admit or deny visitors should be in a separate form.
Right.
I would suggest that it should not be. It should just be part of the power of attorney for healthcare decisions.
Okay. And why do you think
so? The same person then who has authority to make decisions about healthcare would also have the power to admit or deny access for visitors.
Right.
I think if you have two different documents and potentially two different people in charge, you can run into some problems.
Right.
You have the person who has authority to make medical decisions is barred from the room by the person who has the authority to admit visitors.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder whether you would. Do you have to have if you're going to do a separate hospital visitation form? Do you need to identify a separate person who's going to make those decisions, or can you just say these are the people I want to be able to visit me, and therefore when, and you know, and then either the visiting the person who's the healthcare power uses that, but has the authority to overrule it as needed, or it can be in effect even when there's no healthcare power, when there's no need for the person who's the healthcare power to act in that capacity. I mean, like I said, the only situation I can think of where it matters is if you have someone who's sleeping, you know, who's able to make their own decisions but who's sleeping, and you don't interrupt them to ask permission. So I'm just trying to think about it from a practical matter. Maybe that's not enough of an issue, but I certainly understand why it makes sense to do it as part of the healthcare power. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that? Okay, if not, I have another question. Do any of you, what do you all think about whether you think you might want to include hospital visitation language at all, whether as a separate document or as part of the healthcare power for naming people who can visit? Is that something that you think you would do, might do, definitely wouldn't want to do?
I think there's two different ways to do that. This is David again.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the way you suggested, make a list of people that the person might want to have ability to visit.
Right.
But that's kind of more on the form of a living will.
Right.
These are the directions that I want.
Right.
Whereas the other way it could be done is just give someone else the power.
Right.
Don't list anybody, but say this person has the authority to admit or deny visitors.
Right.
And that I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good to include.
Okay, got it. Any other thoughts?
Randy, this is Dennis Sandoval.
Hi, Dennis.
I came in a little bit late on when you started.
Okay.
If the individual has nobody designated to say who can visit, and if they if there is no handwritten document or whatever, is there anything in the law that you're speaking of that would, where there's a disagreement among family members, how that would be resolved?
It's not addressed at all. It's completely silent on that matter.
I guess everybody has cooperative families that all get along then, right?
Right. Well, there's something you might want to submit a comment about. I mean, there are definitely things that are not addressed.
Okay, I mean, because that's obviously a major problem that's going to occur. Okay,
right,
thank you.
Right. You can, yeah. You're welcome.
All right.
Anyone else have a thought or a question? Okay. In that case, we will wrap up. If you do have any thoughts, opinions, questions after the call, I would love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on this so that I can continue to share, you know, with all of you the evolving thinking on this topic. You can look for the email from us so that you can take some action. And again, I would definitely request that you consider submitting the comment about the observing someone's registry and obtaining the documents from the registry. Thank you very much, and look forward to talking to you again next month. Bye-bye.